In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
So glad you're joining us here on the I Spy Radio Show. We hope you had a great Thanksgiving last week. There is certainly a lot to be thankful for, not least of which is that America is getting back on track. Now, what you're going to hear today is going to take you in directions the mainstream media doesn't want you to go. Those of us on the right have long been suspicious of the Democrat Party itself, and former President Obama, and former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, and former president and first lady wannabe Bill Clinton. We've been suspicious about whether the Democrat Party wants to see America succeed or fail. You never hear Democrats say the simple words, "I want America to win." They want America to be equal, equal with other countries, and by definition that means not winning. But is it more than that? Could they actually want America to fail? As you listen to today's show, you're going to hear evidence that goes back to the 1980s of Democrats colluding with Russia, then the Soviet Union, to try to sabotage America. If you're paying attention to what's happening, meaning that you're ignoring the mainstream media, you know that the whole Trump conspired with Russia narrative is falling apart, and what it's actually doing is exposing Russian ties to the Democrats, including and especially to the Clintons. But as you'll hear today, it's much deeper than just Russia, even much deeper than Hillary and the Russians. Buckle up, don't go anywhere, and let's get to it. I'd like to welcome now Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. He's a consultant to many federal, state, and local agencies. He's also the author of two great books, which are up on iSpy Radio's store page just in time for Christmas. First book is Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. Fascinating book. And his newest book is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
Yeah, so let's talk, let's start actually with President Trump's trip to China, which was hugely underreported, I think, by the media, which tells me it must have been incredibly successful. He put together billions in trade deals, and very little of it is even mentioned in the mainstream media. You had to go look for it, really. $250 billion in trade deals. I mean, if Obama had done $2 billion, the mainstream media would be talking about nonstop. Just one deal of those 250 was $83 billion for West Virginia and coal and gas, the largest ever trade deal in state history. And the list of trade deals is pretty impressive. But what's most important, I think, is what these new trade deals will do to stabilize relationships with China. Let's get your overall impression of that trade deal of his.
I think the beginning and what's most important is to recognize that President Trump understands that we're in the midst of global economic war. Every administration preceding him, including the Bush administration, probably all the way back to President Reagan, and Reagan was the last who understood this, all war starts with economics and ends with economics.
Yes.
And what President Obama in particular didn't understand, and maybe President Clinton did understand, but was playing for the other team, I don't know. We have had a consistent policy that was against the American economy and pro other nations.
Yes.
And President Trump gets this. He understands we're in economic war. He understands the intellectual property theft that the Chinese have been perpetrating against us. He understands the forced technology transfer. He understands that we've built their economy since the Clinton years pretty much on the back of our intellect and property, and that he's said, enough of this. America needs to be treated fairly, and that was the purpose of his trip, and I believe he was successful to a certain degree in that respect.
Yeah. Well, $250 billion is certainly nothing to sneeze at. You know, you have an article titled, It's All About the Economy, and we'll make sure that we link this up in the links section of today's show page on iSpyRadio.com. And the article is titled, It's All About the Economy. And within that, you discuss a Carnegie study regarding China and the U.S., Japan, and global conflicts for power. And you gave three scenarios within that. Scenario one, China wins. And under that scenario, China's 10% annual economic growth continues unabated. U.S. economic growth slows to just 1.5% per year, leading to enormous downward pressures on the U.S. defense spending and U.S. military deployments in Asia. I mean, that gets right back to what you were saying there. And then scenario two, America wins. In addition to more spending, the America wins future assumes ideal outcomes across a wide range of military initiatives. And then scenario three, this was the one that most experts had thought was probable, and it's the middle ground scenario. You said this. So which scenario is probable? America does not collapse back into economic crisis, but neither does yearly growth reach the 3% threshold policymakers desperately hope for. China also enjoys moderate economic expansion, sustaining continued improvement of its air, sea, land, space, and cyber forces. This version of the Western Pacific circa 2030 is also probably the best that anyone in Washington should hope for, given economic, cultural, and strategic realities. So it's interesting about all of those scenarios. You really tie into the economy with the military aspects of things.
Well, and actually to give credit where it's due and then also to give blame where it's due, those were the findings of the Carnegie study, the Carnegie Institute for International Peace. And those findings, I believe, are somewhat valid. In fact, I believe they're very valid, but I hate their conclusions. And I got into a big argument with this in the Defense Intelligence Agency. I sent my blog on this, and I said, this is what the Carnegie Institute says. And what they said was, it's about the economy. They said, if the U.S. economy grows and the Chinese economy doesn't grow, U.S. wins. If the Chinese economy grows and the U.S. economy doesn't grow, the Chinese win. And if we muddle through, China will just continue to gain ground on the United States. And they thought the muddle through was the most likely. Now, I, in response, wrote a blog post that says, don't you think the Chinese know this? Don't you think they realize that if they can hamper our economy to the benefit of theirs, that they win? So don't you think they would engage in economic warfare tactics? Now, I sent that, and the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency at the time is the notorious General Michael Flynn, who was in the Trump administration and, you know, is now in all this intrigue. Well, I got to know General Flynn pretty well because he contacted me and said, this viewpoint that you have is not being articulated in Washington. It needs to be out there. I need you to come to Washington, and I want to have you speak to the DIA. And so I flew to D.C., and he said, instead of just having you speak, I'm actually bringing in the author of this report, Michael Swain, who's the big shot at the Carnegie Institute, and he brought in with him the number two at the World Bank, who was a Chinese national that was on their side, and we're going to debate because he disagrees with your conclusions. And I said, well, that's fine. I disagree with his. And I said, but don't you think it's strange that you're bringing a money manager from Texas in to debate the head of the Carnegie Institute for International Peace as well as the number two at the World Bank? I mean, really, do you really think, you know, I mean, they're paid full time to do this, and I'm just drawing observations, writing books and a blog and so forth. Do you really think that's a? And he said, well, absolutely. I want to hear what happens. And I'll tell you what happened. They got up and said, oh, China has no negative intentions to the American economy. Absolutely
sure.
None. They're not going to hurt our currency. All of that. That's the genesis for all of this. I think time has proven me correct. And I think that if you ask the DIA participants, that they would say that I got it right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming back, we'll have more with Kevin Freeman talking about China. It's all about tech and trade today. Stay with us. Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. We're talking about tech and trade today here on the iSpy Radio Show. And going out of that last segment, you were talking about this debate that General Flynn had essentially got together. You and the big shot from the Carnegie Foundation, and then also this representative from the World Bank. So what was the conclusions of that? What did he come away with from that debate?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Carnegie guys represented the globalist position, and it was essentially that America should over time lose its position and power to China, and
wow.
we're all buddies here and so forth. And General Flynn, we met with him afterwards and sat down, and there the DIA, who is head of China there, that's the individual analyst. He was siding with the globalist approach, and General Flynn didn't seem to take much stock in that. And in fact, they said, "Well, who do you listen to?" And I listed to some of the China experts that I work with and talk to, and people like Mike Pillsbury and the former head of the Office of Net Assessment, Andy Marshall, and Gordon Chang, and a few other people I work with on China issues. And they, you know, had complete disdain for them. But General Flynn said, "Those are the people I like." And he had respect. So he, I believe, felt comfortable. And he and I, General Flynn, and I developed a decent relationship after that. And I've talked to him multiple times. And I'm sorry for the difficulties that he's in now. And I hope it all works out for him. But I think it was pretty clear. The American position was the position that I took. And China is and has been attempting to undermine our economy. They've got a doctrine of this. It's titled Unrestricted Warfare. They published it in a book. The PLA, People's Liberation Army of China, published this that basically says you undermine your adversary, your enemy's economy.
Sure.
And it enables you then to outpace them militarily, and you can overtake their position.
Oh, I mean, that just goes back to Sun Tzu's Art of War. What I don't understand is why these so-called brainy people at the Carnegie Foundation don't see that. I mean, all you got to do is read what they have actually said. Why would you come away with the conclusion that, oh, China doesn't mean any harm for us? I mean, it almost sounds like he's been bought off in some ways.
Well, you know, you bring that point up, and I won't question his motives, but I will say this. China has bought off a large number of people in the United States, in the intelligence area, in the fact there was a convicted Chinese spy who was handing off secrets, and he was the mentor of the guy that was moderating the debate. We
wow.
also have the Chinese influence in the Confucius Institutes, where they bought off major universities. We have China buying into Hollywood, where you can't make a movie unless China approves of it. So Richard Gere, who is no conservative, but he is sided with Dalai Lama, and China dislikes that. And so Richard Gere finds he can't get a good part.
Wow.
You can't get a – so they are doing a massive influence operation, so much so that I was at the Heritage Foundation, and I was speaking and on this subject, and up comes a supposed Chinese scholar from a leading American university with a business card. It's a leading American. And I took the business card from this lady, and I looked at it, and I looked at her, and I just knew. I said, "You're PLA, aren't you? People's Liberation Army." And she broke. You could see the look of, you know, caught you, red-handed look on her face. She said,
wow.
Yes, I am. And she admitted it. And I said, "Do you disagree with anything I've said?" And she said, "No." I said, "So are you going to whack me? Do I have to look over my shoulder?" And she said, "Oh no." I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because we own half this town."
Wow.
And I looked at her. I said, "Did you just say that?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Who owns the other half?" She said, "The Saudis."
Yes. Yeah, I could certainly see that. Wow. That's just, it's really chilling. And what's interesting about this, too, is you don't hear about it at all. All you hear about is this Russia stuff. And yet China, it sounds from what you're describing, is they have far more influence here in the U.S. than Russia could even dream of.
Well, Russia actually takes positions on the side of China in order to have more relevance. Mm. And so Putin has been attacking the dollar and trying to get the Chinese to join him. He knows he could never displace the dollar as the reserve currency of the world on his own. But with China, and so it's all Russia-China, And so you're exactly right. China kind of allows Russia at times to be part of what they're doing. Other times they feel like they don't need them. But Russia is always looking to include China.
Well, you know, in these mainstream media newscasts, because they're spending so much time on Russia, it really takes away from time that they could be spending on China. And it seems like they're totally missing the boat on this. What kind of influence does China have in Facebook? Are they heavily invested in Facebook or Twitter or some of these other social media?
You know, the influence that I know of, that I can speak with authority over, is Chinese influence over American tech companies is access to the Chinese market. Mm-hmm. And by offering it or withholding it, they determine what the American tech companies do. And I'll give you an example, not Facebook, not Twitter, because I really don't know their ownership status there. But what I do know is Alibaba. And Alibaba raised $25 billion in an initial public offering in the United States. We gave them our money, and then they turned around and used that money to buy up stakes in other Silicon Valley companies. I also know that when Apple comes in and says, hey, we have a new iPhone that we want to debut and offer in China, the Chinese government says, let us see your security architecture. Show us exactly how you'll protect our citizens. Now, are the Chinese truly interested in giving privacy rights to their citizens? I don't think so. Or are they truly interested in knowing the security architecture so that they can come back and hack and get into American stuff?
Wow.
I think that's more likely.
Oh, absolutely. Boy, this is getting into some chilling territory. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Everyone stay with us. Lots more with Kevin Freeman. And welcome back. Fascinating discussion today with Kevin Freeman. He's one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. You're talking about trade and tech today. And boy, during the break there, you mentioned some other Russian hacking that was just really didn't get any notice. And this was their attempt to hack the 2008 election. Why don't you talk to us about that?
Yeah, and we use the term hack in the broad sense. You know, like hack your life,
Sure.
The Russians in 2008... In the summer of 2008, as we were in a housing bubble bursting, as the economy was going down, they made an overt move. They contacted the Chinese and said, we own a bunch of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and if we dump it now, it will impact America, knowing that in November there was an election. And here's something that's statistically true. 100% of the time, that the economy and stock market turned down significantly in an election year, right before an election, the party in power loses power and the other parties put in power. And this is well known and understood. In the summer of 2008, they tried to crash Fannie and Freddie during that beginning part of the housing bubble burst and recession, knowing what would happen in September and knowing that that would cause the election change in November. The Chinese were asked to join them, and the Chinese chose not to. The Russians acted anyway. And the bad news is the economy went down terribly. That was part of it. The good news is that we were able to recover from it. Had the Chinese joined them and dumped $500 billion of Fannie and Freddie paper on the market, we would not have recovered. So Russia can act, and they can have an impact, but they can't act without China. But the point being, the idea that Russia hacked the election in 2016, there may be some validity to it. I don't doubt that they try and influence every election.
Sure.
They most likely do. Here's clear and compelling evidence. And how do we know that happened? The Treasury Secretary of the United States at the time, Hank Paulson, told us that they were doing it, and it just got glossed over in the media.
Wow.
Nobody really cared about it.
And
they've been influencing every election.
And you said that this occurred in the summer of 2008?
In the summer of 2008, during the midst of the Chinese Olympics.
So summer of 2008, that would have meant that Obama, by that point, would have wrapped up the nomination.
He had the nomination, but he had not been elected. That would be November of when he got elected.
Sure.
So, yes, it was right as we knew it was candidate Obama versus candidate McCain at that point. And in fact, until the economy and stock market imploded in September, McCain was actually leading in the polls. There were some questions of how this junior senator from Illinois, junior state senator, from Illinois that became a senator for less than a single term.
Yeah.
And so he was a junior senator from Illinois. How could he be, the nominee? And then all of a sudden he was the obvious choice.
Well, what's fascinating about that is, of course, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories out there that Obama was essentially a Russian plant. I've certainly seen discussion about that. And now you're seeming to indicate that there's some awfully good evidence that whether or not, they chose. Well, let me back up a little bit. Do you think that they would have done that if somebody else had been running? I mean, was it just simply to displace the Republicans, or was it specifically to try to get Obama himself into office?
I don't know the answer to that, and I am by no means any evidence that he was a Russian plant. However, it was well known and obvious that he had Marxist background and tendencies, and that Putin has Marxist background and tendencies. And Putin likes to just sow discord, and there may have been just some aspect where they said, wouldn't it be fun to get this guy in? He's young and he's smoked dope in high school and college, and they may have been playing with it. I have no idea. But there is no question in my mind that they knew that moving against our economy at that point would prevent John McCain from being elected. They knew it. They were certain of it. It would change the White House. And Putin, the writings at the time, the interviews at the time, Putin was complaining about the direction of the United States. He was complaining about the stances that we were taking. So he wanted to change, and he certainly got hope and change.
So it may have been more about the effect of just weakening America in general, not necessarily trying to get Obama in there. And yet, when I go back and look at that article of yours, in that scenario one, it had said this, that U.S. economic growth slows to just 1.5% per year, leading to enormous downward pressures on U.S. defense spending and U.S. military deployments in Asia. I mean, that's essentially what happened when Obama got in there. All of his actions, and you can blame it on the housing crisis, but that shouldn't have lasted for all 8 years. I mean, we never saw 3% under him. I mean, it almost sounds like that was the scenario that Obama wanted: slow the economy, slow military spending, weaken America.
Increase regulations, stop energy development, all of these things. Keep in mind, Vladimir Putin says the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. And when he's saying that, he's saying, I really blame Reagan, Thatcher, and the Pope for what they did, and the Saudis. Reagan, Thatcher, Pope, and the Saudis all formed an economic cultural warfare plan that broke apart the Soviet Union. It was highly effective. He's reversing all of those things, all of those elements. He wants to use that jujitsu move and turn it on the United States. In fact, the dream is for the United States to break apart into various different nations. And then he had a buddy named Igor Panarin who actually publicly said this is what he thought would happen, predicted it would happen somewhere around the year 2010. And he said that in the year 1998. Wow. And it's documented. It was in the Wall Street Journal and everything.
Wow.
America's going to collapse into five. So this is a Putin thought through scheme and plan. He tried to get the Chinese to join him in 2008. They would not. The scary thing is he's talking to the Chinese about the same thing now, and they've already indicated that they're willing and on board. They're doing everything possible to destroy the Western system. They're creating an alternative to the internet and naming system. They're creating an alternative to the World Bank, an alternative to the International Monetary Fund, an alternative to the SWIFT transaction system. All the things, the underpinnings of the solidarity, the Western financial and economic and cultural system, they're undermining all of them, including funding things that break apart American society, like funding Black Lives Matter and so forth.
Yeah, and George Soros is right in there with that. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Going to be continuing this discussion with Kevin Freeman after this. We're talking with Kevin Freeman, one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. He is a consultant to federal, state, and local agencies. He's got two great books. I highly recommend up there on the iSpy Radio Show page, just to make things easy for you. You go to the store link at the top of our website, iSpyRadio.com. Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. We've been talking about the fascinating influence of Russia within our elections and going back to 2008. And it certainly sounds like Obama, whether he was their target or not, getting him in there to disrupt America was certainly the outcome of that. So in terms of the Uranium One deal, because I suspect that a lot of our audience was going there while you were discussing that in this last segment, how does that tie into all of this?
Well, Uranium One is just evidence that the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons personally were willing to sacrifice American national security for financial interests. And it's not the first time that it happened. It happened in the late 1990s with the Chinese. But Uranium One is, 20% of our uranium resources given over in exchange for these lavish donations to the foundation, big speaking fees and all of that. But it all ties in. The whole corruption, remember President Obama said to Medvedev on the hot mic, didn't know it was being recorded, tell Mr. Putin I'll have more flexibility after my election. The administration was geared toward working with the Russians and the Chinese.
Well, and not only geared towards working with them, but geared towards subverting America with them.
Yes, subverting American interests in exchange for financial support of their political agenda or whatever else.
Yeah, and earlier we had speculated that maybe, and some people have speculated this themselves, is that Obama was a plant by the Russians. Really, in looking back at that election in 2008, either one of the Democrat candidates would have been fine with the Russians. We certainly see that, as you just mentioned there, with the Clintons that are willing to sell out American interests for their own gain. I mean, that's really the hallmark of socialism. It's the people at the top use the system to benefit themselves, and that's what we saw with the Uranium One deal. Going back, to China, in terms of how they've gotten all of this influence, how exactly do they do that? Is it simply buying people off? Is it buying people that then gain positions of power? And the reason I'm asking that is because you've got that guy, the so-called brainiac there from the Carnegie Foundation, certainly willing to, more than happy to see America fail in order to elevate China. I mean, is the Carnegie Foundation getting Chinese money?
I don't know. I can't speak to that. Don't want to question his motives, but I'll tell you this. You go back to the late 1990s. There was a restaurant operator in Little Rock, Chinese restaurant operator named Charlie Tree. And Charlie Tree arranged for Chinese money to illegally be placed into the DNC hands, the Democrat National Committee. They were caught. This isn't conjecture. It's not conspiracy theory. There were Senate hearings on this. It was written in the New York Times, Washington Post, and so forth. It wasn't made nearly as big a deal as the idea that a Russian wanted to hand the Trump campaign some negative stuff on Clinton. It wasn't made as nearly a big, but it was a big, big deal. The Chinese were specifically putting money, millions of dollars, into the election in the late 1990s to keep President Clinton in. And you'll notice from that point forward, American policy has been handing over concession after concession after concession. China's economy, which had just been barely growing, took off from that late 1990s point till today, to where some argue that they are the world's largest economy. That is one of the largest sellouts in American history. It's extraordinarily well documented. It's just largely forgotten.
Well, not only forgotten, but simply ignored. I mean, if the Republicans had taken millions of dollars from China, I can't imagine that we would have stopped talking about it to this point. So how has that gone so unnoticed? Because you don't even hear that on so-called Republican-friendly media like Fox News. And to be honest, I'm not even sure that I remember that story.
Well, we get led around so that we forget. The Republican and conservative media is constantly led to the latest thing. So we're talking Judge Moore, we're talking this, or we're talking this. You want to talk Russian collusion, we ought to remember in 1984 that Senator Ted Kennedy flew to Moscow when it was the Soviet Union, and he begged them to help him win the campaign so that he would have a pro-Soviet Union policy. Hmm. We know this because when the wall fell, KGB documents were released. It's very well documented. It's absolute collusion between a Democrat icon, Ted Kennedy, and the Soviet Union. They were busy colluding to try and undermine President Reagan's presidency because they knew that the handwriting was on the wall. If Reagan won re-election, the Soviet Union would not survive. And so they were colluding with a leading Democrat candidate. Wow. But nobody even discusses it. It's very easy to find. You can Google it. Nobody talks about it because we're all being led around by the current narrative, which is Matt Lauer touched somebody or this happened or this happened. I'm not trying to belittle those things. I'm just trying to tell the media keeps the American public constantly off topic by saying, squirrel, look over there, there's a squirrel. And yeah. I say that to my dog and my dog runs.
Yeah. Boy, this just gets back again, you know, to what has developed now, this whole Russia narrative. It's clear that it's the Democrats, it's the Clintons that were involved with Russia. And that is becoming more and more apparent, not only with the Uranium One, but all of these other little side deals with Fusion GPS and their ties to both Russia and Ukraine. I mean, this is what a lot of us on the right have talked about with the Democrats, is that they are essentially communists, that they have been totally sold out to the communists and socialism. And here you're giving us all the evidence for that.
Well, and that we get evidence every day in that you talk to the Bernie Sanders crowds or whatever. They only worry about Russia if it looks like the Republican has won. They're pro-Russia every other opportunity. They're pro-historical Marxism. You see the young people that align themselves with the Democratic Party would rather live in a communist country than in the United States. This is a massive propaganda effort that started in the 1950s, actually started in the 1930s, and has continued today. It really is a brainwashing of the university system. It's a brainwashing in Hollywood. Yes. And the Chinese are good at it. The Russians are good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go and take a break right there. Coming up, what about North Korea? And welcome back. Talking with Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity, author of two great books, which we've got up on iSpyRadio.com. Just head to the store page up there. And they may not sound like good Christmas gifts, but you know what better gift than the gift of security, especially that his most recent book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. And this has been a fascinating discussion, Kevin. So much information here in terms of the influence the Russians have had, not on the Republicans, but on the Democrats. But I don't think the Republicans are completely guilt-free here in terms of influence on them. You mentioned Saudi Arabia earlier. But do you think that there is some kind of Russian influence within the Republican Party, especially the establishment Republicans?
Well, the politics makes for strange bedfellows.
Yes.
And certainly you'll use what you've got when you can. And so there's no doubt that there's Russian influence in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. There's Russian influence wherever they can get it. And the same is true for every potential enemy or threat to the United States, including radical Islam or whatever. So, yes, the Republicans are not clean.
Yeah. I'd like to shift gears a little bit to North Korea in this segment here. But before we go, though, but getting back to the DNC there and taking millions of dollars from China, what was the outcome of that? Was anybody ever sent to jail? Was anybody held responsible? Did they at least change some laws to prevent that from happening again?
Well, they sent the money back. They caught it. There was a congressional investigation. There were people that were punished. I don't know exactly if they were sent to jail or community service. It's been a long time ago. But there was zero doubt. This is not conspiracy theory. It is absolute certainty covered in every major newspaper in the world. The Chinese had tried to buy influence through the DNC. They'd given money, and they had to return the money.
Hmm. Wow. Let's shift gears now to North Korea in the time that we have left here with you. You know, earlier this week, North Korea fired off an intercontinental ballistic missile, an ICBM, that could have easily reached Hawaii and which North Korea claimed could have reached the west coast of the U.S. So in terms of China's supposed influence over them, you know, if their goal is to basically deflate America's economy and take over world dominance, how much influence are they really wielding there over North Korea? I mean, isn't it more like, oh, yes, you know, we're gonna stop them, and yet they're not stopping them?
Well, here's my personal opinion. First, I believe that President Xi is not fond of Kim Jong-un. He doesn't like him, never met with him, as far as we know. Our intelligence services don't realize. But China, North Korea is a buffer for China. It's a protection. It is like their awful, hateful pit bull dog on a leash, and they keep him on a leash. President Trump is right. They have the ability to restrain North Korea. They can collapse the North Korean economy just by stopping trade. And they've proven that recently when they've stopped, they've done construction on a road between them, and they've stopped flights between them. And that's like yanking the leash chain. Now, having said that, I believe that they want North Korea to be a threat to the U.S. I believe they want North Korea to be the threat because they can redirect our attention there. It's like the squirrel. And at the same time, they can offer assistance in exchange for benefits if we do certain things. But North Korea, if they have the ability to fire a missile, and I believe it could, General Mattis said it could reach any point in the continental United States. If that is correct, then it could certainly be launched above the United States in the right trajectory that would allow for an electromagnetic pulse burst.
Yes.
That would wipe out our electric grid. And that is a permanent, ongoing threat that China somewhat mostly controls, but North Korea has.
Yes, and we may have mentioned this earlier in the show, or maybe I mentioned it to you off air, but I remember back in the early 2000s, that was something that the Defense Department was extremely worried about, that North Korea could load a nuclear missile onto a cargo ship, park it 20 miles off of our coast in international waters, and shoot it off the deck into the atmosphere, creating that EMP. And we're talking like 90 seconds or something like that for a response time from us to even try to shoot it down. But in terms of that scenario, whether it's off the coast or from their own shores there, what do you think is the likelihood of that sort of attack if North Korea really did want to attack the U.S.?
Well, I hope the likelihood is low, but if they really wanted to, they have the nuclear capabilities. They've tested and proven the H-bomb capability. Now they've tested and proven the missile capability. Can they do it? The answer is absolutely yes, they can. And they're proliferating that technology potentially to Iran and other places. So this is a very serious risk. Will they do it? Well, it's not in China's interest for them to do it, and the retaliation would be pretty severe. But remember what Dick Cheney used to say, if there's even a 1% chance, we must treat it as a certainty and eliminate the risk. Mm. And there is certainly more than a 1% chance here.
So you said China would not like to see that sort of attack. Is it simply because we're their biggest customer?
Yeah, right now the economic blowback to China would be pretty ridiculous. But they're creating the situation where they're not dependent on the Western economy, and the One Belt, One Road initiative where they're establishing trade relations in Europe and Africa and the rest of Asia, they could go without the United States. At some point, we will be more of a liability than a benefit to them. And at that point, we're in deep and serious trouble. And that point is approaching.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, let's take a break there. Come back more with North Korea with Kevin Freeman. Stay with us. And welcome back on our final segment now with Kevin Freeman, one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. He's got two books out that I would highly recommend. They would make great Christmas presents. Certainly, the gift of security is a precious one for your family. You can learn how to protect yourself from the coming cyber economic attack, and that's what we're going to be talking about here in this last segment. So we've talked about North Korea and the ability to shoot off a nuclear weapon, in particular an EMP, set that off in the atmosphere that could totally destroy so much of our electronics here and our infrastructure. But, of course, that's just one scenario. The other thing that not only North Korea but a bunch of actors now, including ISIS and a lot of other people that would like to see us harmed, is the cybersecurity attacks. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that and where things lie with not just North Korea and their capabilities, but maybe some of these other actors as well?
Well, the thing about cyber is it levels the playing field. You can hire hackers. You have cyber capabilities that can be just as sophisticated as any other nation on Earth. That's not necessarily true. No matter how good or advanced the North Korean nuclear program has become, they're behind where we are. And missile technology and so forth, they're behind in every respect. But in cyber, the playing field is level. And the other problem with it is that you can do as much damage to the civilian as you do to the government. And right now, our nation is not set up for the military to protect civilian cyber targets.
By civilian, you mean business interests, not necessarily the infrastructure. Okay. Well, in terms of protecting us, we've known about the dangers of EMPs for a long time now. And I remember congressional testimony, I think back in the 90s, that we've researched in the past. And they were saying at that time, look, you've got to start shielding our electrical grid. Has anything ever been done about that? And do you see the Trump administration doing something about that?
Well, I know President Trump was briefed on it. My friends briefed him on the issue. I know it's not that expensive to address. I know Ted Koppel wrote a book called Lights Out, where he talked about how cyber attacks or EMPs could take down the grid and how vulnerable the grid is. It's a recognized problem, not only by our nation, but by other nations that are our adversaries. But no, very little has been done given the magnitude of the problem. And the reason is the utilities want to be self-regulated. They don't want anybody telling them what to do. And so they have blocked or tried to stop any effort. And they say, well, you know, if that happens, we're all dead anyway. So what do we care?
Wow.
That's a terrible attitude.
Yeah. And of course, we're busy talking about Russia, and sexual predators and everything else instead of what we ought to be talking about. In your book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, why don't you give our audience a couple of hints about what they'll learn on protecting themselves?
Well, the main thing is that this is an economic war. And once you recognize it's an economic war, you realize that the target is you. It's your bank account. It's the currency that you hold. It's your pension plan. It's all of those things. And so short of trying to kill every American, which EMP has risk of killing 90% of us, or dropping a nuclear bomb, we have to worry about the fact that they might try and attack our economy. And how do you protect yourself? Well, you take basic cyber hygiene protections. You try and back up your computer. You try and keep paper copies of the statements that you get from financial institutions. You try and do the patches and keep your computer up to date. But you also keep your portfolio up to date. You want to make certain that if we go into a hyperinflationary environment, that you have the right investment approach, or if we go into a deflationary environment, and what a foreign nation could do to trigger one or the other, and why they might trigger it, because it would be in their interest. They'd be literally sucking economic strength from America to their nation. And how do you protect yourself? So we walk through the practical things about what you can individually do. We talk about what our nation ought to be doing to protect us. And we do it in the format of the bad, the good, and the beautiful. Hmm. Not the good, the bad, and the ugly of Clint Eastwood. The bad is the problem, the good is the solutions, and the beautiful is putting your treasure in heaven. It's trust in, it's loving your kids. It's trust in America. It's trust in God. So yeah. It's all in that format.
Well, I definitely don't want to leave it up to Congress to protect you. I mean, that's the biggest selling point, I think, for your book is, do you really trust these Republicans to take steps to protect you? Unfortunately not. And also, unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. Kevin, this has been a fascinating discussion. I want to thank you so much for it.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show. If you're looking for a unique Christmas gift, head to the store page at iSpyRadio.com. We have not only Kevin's books, but the books of all of our guests, Dr. Tim Ball, Burgess Owens, the great novels by Scott McEwen, just to name a few. Don't just give any old gift. Give a little knowledge this year. Also, don't forget, you can help stop the taxpayer funding of abortions. Step one is to sign the petition to get it on the upcoming ballot. Head to stopthefunding.org. Stopthefunding.org. They are still 60,000 votes short. Take action, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.